isn't always intentional and can be because they don't know the rules, even though the DOL provides fact sheets.
There's generally overtime violations in the industry where they could be paying straight time for overtime or they could be backing into the overtime rate.
Since 2021, the federal agency has completed more than 1,600 investigations and recovered almost $29 million in back wages and damages for nearly 25,000
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston,
I'm Ross Brown,
a Pacifica
reporting.
Radio station.
Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You are hearing Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch, and that tells us that it is 6 p.m. Wednesday and time for So What's Your Story?, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. We are aired only on Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1 FM here in Houston, or kpft.org on the internet. I am Mary Edgerton, tonight's host, and along with the best team on radio, we celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers whose stories take us on journeys to the windows of their souls, on fanciful trips amid worlds of enchantment, before returning us safely to the present. Tonight, I'm bringing you all stories about lessons learned from animals. I have always been fascinated by animals, from the cattle we raised on our ranch to our pet cats at home, and a few birds in between. They bring such richness into our lives. A secret I will share with you. I have always imagined that my pets are really wise, magical creatures. They inhabit our stuffed animals and bring them to life to help guide us through our journeys. I could easily see myself as a friend of Christopher Robin in Winnie the Pooh, frolicking along and learning the Eastern philosophy of Taoism from them. So let go your worries and your misgivings, and come on this journey with me and my guests. Let's hear about the lessons we learn from our companions who share this earth with us. So in the next hour, you will hear about love, learning life's lessons together, and then let's just say coexistence and acceptance. Let's go.
My first guest tonight is Christopher Trandell. He is a Houston native, though he has lived in Venezuela, Brazil, Holland, along with the states of Hawaii, California, and Maine. He is a professional captain of tall ships, including schooners and square riggers. He was the first mate of Alyssa, Galveston's tall ship, for her 2018 sailing season. As you might imagine, Christopher has traveled the world. He has a wonderful story for us about his time working in the Kiribati Island Group, and it includes a very special friend. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
So, this theme tonight is animals, and I was just thrilled by your story about a very special animal. Can you share that with us, Chris?
Absolutely. So in 2007, December of 2007, I was hired as captain of Kwai, sailing vessel Kwai, which was an old Danish herring fisher that had been converted into a sailing cargo ship. Her home base was Honolulu, and we took all kinds of goods and services down to the Kiribati Group, which is about 1,200 miles due south of Hawaii on the equator, and the Northern Cook Island Group, all the way down to Rarotonga, which is about the same latitude and longitude as Hawaii, but down in the South Pacific. And we also stopped in Samoa, we stopped in Tonga, Fiji, and so forth. And we took all kinds of goods. You name it, we took it all down there. We took Isuzu Pup pickup trucks, which we picked up and put onto outrigger canoes and they rowed it ashore to Washington Island. And then a couple of big old bruisers came out and picked it up, put it on the sand and drove it away. We put 32 donated Windows computers into an outrigger canoe where they rowed it across the lagoon at Fanning Island and took it to the other village. We took everything down to the South Pacific. Well, I got off the boat in December of 2008. And when I got off the boat from the South Pacific, I found out the entire world was homeless. However, the good news is, except one friend of mine, and that friend of mine was Gulliver. And Gulliver was a blue macaw, and he was the fourth crew on a small sailboat that unfortunately in a storm was driven onto the reef at Fanning Island in the Kiribati group. The couple went ashore, they rescued the dog, they rescued Gulliver, but because they're foreign islands and Fanning Island does not have regular service between the islands, they were forced to leave the dog and leave Gulliver. Well, eventually a group got together along with that couple, and they managed to get the dog to Christmas Island, where they had a vet come down from Hawaii, clear him for travel, and the dog was brought home. Except the expense in making that happen was going to be measurably more for Gulliver, so they just left Gulliver. I don't want to say they abandoned him, but there was already a plan in place to rescue him and bring him back to the United States as well. I get an email from the owner of the ship who says, hey, when you get to Fanning Island, you're going to stop, you're going to pick up a parrot, and you're going to bring him to Christmas Island, and the whole plan will be in place. Vet from Hawaii, travel back to the United States, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, I said, no problem. So we met with our agent, and he had Gulliver in his house. And so we picked him up, and he had a beautiful cage, and he had in wire on the cage, it said Gulliver. So his name was on the cage, and he knew his name. And he was a very young parrot. I don't know what his age was, but he was very young, but he was a one-word parrot. And of course, it's so cliche to say it, but it's so apropos, was you had me at hello. That's the one word he knew, was hello, and he was very proud of it. Well, when we brought him aboard, we put him on the stern of the ship, where he could be out in the open air, calm weather, it's Pacific, you know, it's summertime, it's wonderful. Well, because he was a very mouthy animal, our cook took exception, our German cook took exception to having him back there screeching, hello, 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 hello all the time. So Jan and I would talk about Gulliver, and he would say, oh, if that bird says hello one more time, I'm thinking fricassee, or I'm thinking Cornish game hens. And I would look at Gulliver and go, oh, you better watch out. He's got some good adobo sauce and some bananas in there. He can come up with something. So it got a little, it started getting a little hot. Some cloud cover had left. And so it was very sunny. It was very hot. So I cleared a space on the vegetable shelves next to one of the portholes from my bunk. And I put his cage up there, and it was undercover. And I just switched the head and foot of my bed around so at night I could talk to him. He was very tame, could take him out of the cage. He wouldn't try and fly away. He would sit on my shoulder. So the whole cliche, again, the whole pirate cliche, I'm standing up there on the bridge at the ship's wheel, at the helm, with Gulliver on my shoulder, steering the ship as we sailed along to Christmas Island. Well, Gulliver and I bonded. That was, he was my boy. Okay. We get to Christmas Island and we're unloading cargo, and it got towards the end of the day. And because supposedly, quote unquote, there was a plan in place, we put him in the cargo basket by himself in his cage. And the ship was about 25 feet below the pier, because they would have fuel ships come in to refuel the island, essentially. So it wasn't exactly a working pier for us, but they had cranes that would reach over, pick up cargo, and bring it ashore. Well, put him in the cargo basket, and I'm standing there, and as Gulliver is disappearing into the sky, all I could hear was, hello, 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 hello. And then he disappeared over the edge of the dock. And of course, my heart was breaking. Because the owner of the ship had said, if you want to keep him, you are welcome to keep him. And I thought about it, and the crew and I discussed it, but I've made the decision not to do that. Because not only do we go to Kiribati, but we go to the Cook Islands, we go to Samoa, and then we come back to Hawaii. The quarantine restrictions probably would have been too heavy for poor Gulliver. He might have had to go into quarantine every single time. I didn't know what that would be like, but I thought, you know what? There's a plan in place and there's a sanctuary waiting for him. What could possibly be better? So despite my own deep-seated emotional interest in this, let's go with the plan. So come the end of the day, we close up shop and I go ashore and I get a hold of my friend Temma, who had a diving service on the island and super good guy, but he was one of those people who knows everybody on the island. And I said, hey, the bird came ashore, Gulliver's ashore. Any idea where he is? He goes, no, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't know. So he makes a couple of calls. Nobody knows. And then he said, why don't you go down and check out the local ecological NGO over on the east end of the island. So I strolled over there and I walked in and I caught them just before they were closing up shop. And I said, hey, I'm Captain of Kauai. Oh, yeah, we know who you are. Any idea where Gulliver is? The bird that came ashore. And they said, we have no idea what you're talking about. So they burned up the coconut wireless to find him. And about 20 minutes later, they came back and said, yeah, they're going to kill him. Because apparently he came ashore. Nobody knew what was going on. He ended up at Marina's house, the agricultural inspector. She called the main government of Tarawa, which you have to understand that there's two island groups in the Kiribati group. There's the Eastern Island group, which is just south of Hawaii. But Tarawa and the main island group and the seat of government is in the middle of nowhere Pacific. It is one of the most remote locations on the planet. Well, they found out that there was an invasive species on the island. Nobody had gotten authorization or permission or done whatever needs to be done. And they just said, kill it. Now, I remember this as if I was standing there right now and I just had a chill go up my spine. Because I remember standing there and feeling my face go stone-faced. My whole body went absolutely zen-like still. And I stood there and I thought for a moment and I looked at the men and I said, you need to start calling everybody. I want him back. I want him back on board and I want him back on board today. Well, they burned up the coconut wireless again. And found out that, nope, he's already ashore. The decision's made. It's too bad. So long. Good luck. I thought for a moment again. And I said, all right, start spreading the word that if I don't have Gulliver back on board by tonight or at the very latest tomorrow morning, or if they kill him before I get him, I'm closing up shop and I am taking everybody's cargo down to the Cook Islands and I'm going to sell it in the Northern Cooks. And by the time I get fired, we'll be back in Rarotonga where we'll be refilling the ship and it won't matter anymore because your cargo will be gone. And I walked out and I went to go see my friend Temma and I told him the same thing. I said, start making calls because I won't be fired until I get to Rarotonga. It's as simple as that. No uncertain terms. Well, apparently all night long, it was like Black Friday on the Wall Street stock exchange floor. Everybody was calling everybody. Emails were burning up the phone lines. It was chaos. So the next morning, Temma, one of the guys from the Ecological Institute and one of the local representatives in Christmas Island, came down to the boat and said, okay, we've straightened it out. There is actually a plan to save him. Just like what happened with the dog. And I said, I need to hear that from Marina. Now, Marina was a very nice lady. She always took good care of us when we came into the island group, never any problems. And they said, well, let's go. So they took me over to her house. She didn't happen to be in at that time. But when we walked up, I was like, do we know where Gulliver is? Well, he was in the shack in the back of her house, a big shack, not a shabby shack or anything like that, but he was in the shack back there. And as soon as he heard me say Gulliver, I heard him go, hello, 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 hello. So we went around to the shack. The door wasn't locked, opened the door, and he was running around his cage. Hello, 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 hello. opened the cage. He jumped onto my shoulder. I was petting him. I was telling him everything was going to be okay. Marina came back, found us all there, was a little startled, but she got this huge Cheshire Cat grin on her face. And we started talking, and she told me that, yes, okay, it's going to happen. They're going to have the same vet come down from Hawaii. They're going to reenact the whole plan that they had with the dog, and everything is fine. And then she looked at me and she said, "Were you serious?" And all I did was look at her stone-faced. I never said a word. Never admit you're bluffing. Never admit you're bluffing. But I wasn't. I wasn't. Simple as that. So we went down to the South Pacific. We went down to the Cook Islands. We did our tour. We came back to Christmas Island. And of course, when we got to Christmas Island, as soon as I could get off the boat, I found out that he was still on the island. The vet was slated to come, I think, something like a week or 10 days later. So I go over to visit Marina and go up to the shack. And I'm like, "Hello, Gulliver, where's my boy? Hello, 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 hello." So I saw him. I took him out. And every day we were in Christmas Island, I played with him. I went up and spent as much time as I possibly could. And the day I left, because apparently Marina had fallen in love with him too. Now, I'm not kidding. This is not hyperbole. The day that I left and I went to see him, that we were closing up shop to go back to Hawaii, went up to see him. I played with him for about an hour, and then we had to get underway. And I said, "Goodbye, Gulliver, buddy. Goodbye, buddy. Hopefully I get to see you, but you're going to be okay. You're going to be just fine. You're going to take care of you." And as I closed the door behind me, he said, and I'm choking up right now, he went, "Goodbye." I know, right? I know. I'm choking up right now. I'm choking up thinking about it because I couldn't believe. What are the odds? Seriously, what are the odds? We were gone maybe, what, 5 weeks? 4 weeks? I don't even remember now. This is 2008. But in that time, she had taught him goodbye.
Oh, and he knew right when to use it.
And he said it to me as I was closing the door behind me.
Oh.
And of course, I'm bawling all the way back to the ship.
Yes, yes.
Get back to Hawaii. And I had found out that there was savegulliver.com. And I went online the other day and I found it. But the domain is, you'd have to go back to the Wayback Machine or Internet Archive to find it. And I went on savegulliver.com. Well, the lady who had put together the website lived over on the North Shore. So I got a hold of her and we went and had lunch. And she was telling me all about how they were setting it up and all the communication and the plan and everything like that. And it was great. And I have a Save Gulliver t-shirt. I wish I was wearing it right now, but it's in storage at my mom's house and 10,000 other t-shirts that I have. But fast forward a few years later, I was at University of Houston. I went back to school in 2009, right after I got off Kauai, and I needed to upgrade and renew my captain's license. Well, I had shifted all of my paperwork to the Portland, Oregon Coast Guard Regional Exam Center because they were awesome. They were fantastic. They bent over backwards to make sure you got what you needed. Well, I drove out there, and on my way out, or just before I left, I thought, oh my Lord, wouldn't it be great? Because I have to drive through New Mexico and Arizona. I was going to visit friends and family all up California and then up to Oregon. And so, I contacted the lady. I don't remember her name offhand. And I said, "Look, you know, Gulliver, the one, you know, Kiribati and Save Gulliver and the whole nine yards." And she's like, "Come on in." So I stopped off for an afternoon. She took me into the enclosure. She said, "He's back in there somewhere." And so this is probably 2000. This has to be 2011 because I renewed my captain's. Yeah, 2011. So what, 3 years later, I walk in and I'm like, "Gulliver, Gulliver, where's my boy? Gulliver, where's my boy?" And this blue and yellow rocket flew out of the across the enclosure and hit me on the chest, crawled up onto my shoulder and was walking around my neck and nibbling on my ears. "Hello, hello, 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 hello." So I spent the afternoon with him, and then I left. And of course, he said goodbye again. He had learned a couple more words, but he said goodbye as I left. And then, of course, I went on. And unfortunately, I haven't been back since, but my travels have not taken me in that direction over the years. But
what a wonderful story.
That's my story. But let me just give you a little bit of context and understanding why I think this is a story worth telling. Because Kwai, we did about $175,000 to $250,000 worth of cash transactions when we were on a voyage in Australian dollars, New Zealand dollars, and American dollars. So you can, if you want to consider the ramifications of my decision, we're talking about somewhere around $150,000 possibly in multinational currencies being jeopardized, and not only my job, but also the reputation of Kwai to do that. That would have, talk about disruption of supply and logistic trains. We were the only boat that regularly supplied service to these islands. All of the island cargo services were all boats that should have been condemned when Noah built the ark. So we were the only reliable source of fuel, ramen noodles, plywood, cement, cases of sodas, pickup trucks, diesel fuel drums, everything. And I stood there and for want of a bird that we picked up for free, said, not today, folks, not today.
Wonderful. And I'm so glad you did that. I am an animal lover. And just hearing you talk about Gulliver's hello becoming quieter, it became quieter as he became more distant and distant going away from you. That was already breaking my heart. And then goodbye. But I'm so glad you saved him. And you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, the money, the supply chain, you know.
Yep. I mean, it was a serious decision that was not a decision.
I think you really did burn up the coconut Wi-Fi. And I presume that's what it really was called.
Yeah, that's what everybody calls it, the coconut wireless.
Yeah, the coconut wireless.
All over the South Pacific, it's called the coconut wireless.
Oh, that's great. And birds are very smart. So that he remembered you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I know. I mean, you heard me choke up on the radio right now. So, I mean, it's, I had never really fallen in love with an animal before. I think it was quite, I can tell you right now that it's the first and only time so far in my life that I felt really to put everything on the line for another living thing. And it was, and as I said, it wasn't even a decision.
That's wonderful. And I know those of us, and I have cats, those of us who have pets are very attached to our pets. And it's just so hard to explain to someone when we lose them, how sad it is.
I remember the feeling. I remember it like it was yesterday. And so, yeah. Yes. Yes, we will.
Yes. Well, I'm glad Marina fell in love with him too. That's a great story. And I look forward to having you back on the show, Christopher.
Absolutely. I would love to be back on the show.
You must have some wonderful stories of traveling. That was such a heartening story about a man and a bird who created such a powerful bond. As Chris said, the story is really about the compelling effect an animal can have on a person. These are important lessons about compassion and the rewards of love. Where to next? I have another storyteller who saved the life of an animal, albeit in very different circumstances. This story is about Murph, as told by Eric Heen. You all will recognize Eric as both a storyteller and a co-host here on So What's Your Story? Eric, take it away.
Yeah, it was about 30 years ago. I was living in Missoula, Montana, and things weren't going well. I mean, I was at the low point of my life. Here, I just got divorced. I just dropped out of college. I was almost in bankruptcy. Yeah, it was just the low point of my life. And little did I know that what it would take to turn my life around was this old, deformed, weird-looking dog named Murph. You see, I had this little plumbing business at the time. And I did a job once. I installed a toilet for this old guy, and he didn't have the money to pay me. Now, I used to do the bartering system sometimes. So I said, hey, you got something to trade for my services? We went out to his backyard, and he pointed at the strangest looking dog I'd ever seen. He said, I'll give you my dog for it. Well, I looked at this thing, and it looked like a mistake of nature. It had a huge head, these scrawny little legs, this weird kind of yellowish brown color. I didn't know what to think of this thing. But this guy insisted on giving me his dog, so I said, what the hell? I'll take your mangy mutt. So I managed to get this unwieldy creature into my truck, and I start heading home. I keep looking over at this thing. I'm thinking, God, I should have my head examined. But what am I going to do with this dog? So near the edge of town, I stopped at the dog pound. I thought maybe they could find a good home for Murph. So I stopped there, and Murph started sniffing the air. There's this smoke in the air, and it was from the incinerator where they would burn the dogs when they put them to sleep. And Murph looked at me with these big eyes like he knew what was going on there. And I thought, oh, no, I couldn't do this, even to this dog. So I said, what the hell? And I drove home with this weird-looking creature. I didn't have much time for a dog back then. But every Sunday morning, I took Murph to the park. And, well, maybe I could teach this thing a few tricks. I'd throw a ball for him. He would just look at the ball, and he'd look at me with this expression on his face like he's saying, what's the point in this? I tried to teach him to shake hands. I put my hand out. He would just start licking my fingers. I could not teach this dog anything. And I'd watch him while he's walking around the park there. None of the other dogs there wanted anything to do with Murph. They all just rejected him totally. And as for the people there, everybody would just point at Murph and laugh. I mean, they'd come up to the other dogs and play with them, but there was something about Murph that nobody wanted anything to do with. But even though this dog was totally rejected, I'd never seen a dog so content with his life. He would just wander around and sniff things. He looked like the happiest dog in the world. Well, as time went on, Murph and I developed this ritual. Every day I would come home from work, all tired, and I'd sit in my easy chair and read my mail. And Murph would always come up to me with this old baseball mitt. He developed this obsession with one of my old baseball mitts. He'd bring it up to me, drop it at my feet, and then just lay there the rest of the night. Well, one night, I came home from a really tough day. I was sitting in my easy chair reading my mail. After a while, I realized Murph hadn't come up to me. I got up and I went into the other room there. And there was Murph. He was just laying on the ground, struggling for air. Well, I could see that this was probably about the end of the line for Murph. So I knelt down there by him, and I was looking at him. And I started thinking about how, here, this dog was rejected. Nobody wanted him. I traded a toilet for him, for Christ's sake. But in spite of all that, he was the happiest dog I'd ever seen. And I thought about my own life. Here I was just divorced, dropped out of college, just miserable. But then I realized what Murph was trying to tell me. Murph was trying to say, hey, if things are going tough, don't get down on yourself. What he was trying to tell me is, if Murph was good enough for Murph, then God dang it, I was good enough for me. He breathed his last breath. I gently pressed his eyes shut. And I said, thank you, Murph. And to this day, I really think Murph was just trying to stay alive in order to give me that message. That if Murph was good enough for Murph, then God dang it, I was good enough for me.
Eric, as much as you might have Murph to thank for lessons in life, I think Murph has a lot to thank you for also. You saved his life. But now let's pause for station identification. We are a community-based storytelling radio show broadcast on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston Community Radio, also broadcast at 91.9 in Huntsville, 89.5 in Galveston, and anywhere on the internet as kpft.org. Our show, So What's Your Story, is broadcast every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Central Time. But as you will hear, you can listen to the show after it has been aired. Yes, visit our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, at www.houstonstorytellers.org. That's Houston, H-O-U-S-T-O-N, Story, S-T-O-R-Y, Tellers, T-E-L-L-E-R-S.org. And there are no breaks in Houston Storytellers. It's one word. Again, you can replay any of our previous shows from So What's Your Story by selecting the radio show tab. Want to become a storyteller? Join the Houston Storytellers Guild and attend their monthly story swap on the fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out their calendar tab and grab the Zoom information for the next virtual swap, which is coming up on November the 22nd at 7 p.m. Central Time. This month's theme, I think I'm going to give you one guess. Grateful. You can also find other exciting events on the calendar, such as the next meeting of the San Antonio Storyteller Association. Another way to get into storytelling is by joining Texas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. And you can find them at https://texasstorytelling.com/. And that is spelled TEJASSTORYTELLING. Our friends at the Moth are back at Warehouse Live. Yes, in person and back on schedule for the second Tuesday of the month. The next show is December 13th with the theme Anniversary. Check out their Facebook page, The Moth in Houston, for updates on their next storytelling slam. Speaking of Facebook, you can find us at So What's Your Story on Facebook. Please visit us. Oh, yes, and please like us. You can suggest storytellers or themes on Facebook or by emailing us at sws@kpft.org. And now curl up, get comfortable, and let's journey with our wise and magical animals again. My next guest has yet another marvelous story about bonding with an animal. This story is not as much about the human saving the animal, but more about the animal saving the human. I bring to you Christina Fouts, who hails from Austin, Texas. As a little background, she and Abel Lomas, who was a storyteller on my September 15th show, share a number of activities together, including podcasting and performing music. And now, here she is, Christina Fouts, as I promised. Well, Christina does a number of things besides singing with Abel, and actually, I'm going to let her tell us the story, because in it, she has a story about how she became a life adventurer. Christina Fouts, great to meet you, and welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here.
So go ahead, tell us how you became a life adventurer and what you're doing these days.
When I was a little girl, my mom bought a horse that was said to be unbreakable, and she was a beautiful white and copper paint that actually had red mane that stuck straight up like a zebra. And even so, she was beautiful. She was 14 hands, barely tall enough to be a horse. She looked more like a pony. And she was, her name was Flash, and she had this name. The rumor is that she got this name because if you were brave enough to get on her, she would throw you and you would see a flash of light when you hit the ground. Now, my mom had the reputation in our town for being a horse whisperer. And even with that reputation, though, people were telling her, you should not get this horse. You're not going to be able to tame her. But she went ahead and bought the horse anyway. And she was actually able to tame her. Mostly. So while my mom was able to ride her and kind of get all that groundwork done and she was rideable, she was still really feisty and unpredictable with other riders. So she really wasn't fully tame. But as I said, the horse is like much too short and my mom's rather tall, so she couldn't keep her for herself. So my mom, in all of her wisdom, decided to get this barely tamed horse to me, her 8-year-old daughter.
God.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, Flash knew and understood that I was like a little child. You know, animals have that instinct to know that you're like still a baby. And so she was much more gentle with me, but she was only so much more gentle. She was still really feisty and stubborn and would put up a fight with everything. But I really enjoyed that challenge. And me and my mom, we did a lot more groundwork and training with her. And we got her to become this incredible athlete when it came to barrel racing and trail trials and other Western events. But the more we trained her, it was like she yearned to act out in some other way. She would become very disciplined and this incredible athlete, but then she would need to goof off and be wild. And she was still just not tamed in her spirit. So I kind of saw this and I empathized with this as a child. And I saw this need in her. And I decided to make a little agreement between me and my horse. And that was that I would let her get away with things and goof off and be wild whenever I could get away with that for her. So she could act out. So we would, you know, we would do tricks and we would goof off whenever my mom wasn't watching. And I would let her, you know, eat grass when we would go on trail rides when I wasn't supposed to. And our favorite thing to do together was we would actually go outside of our property. And this was the way for Flash to really get out all her energy and all her, you know, yanks. We would go at the bottom of a hill right outside of our gate. And I would actually sit on her like a jockey and I would pull my head in close to her neck, holding onto her mane. And she would just stand there in anticipation. And she was waiting for a single sound. And when she heard that, she took off at a dead run bolt up the hill. Now, we had no saddle, no shoes, no helmet, no anything, and definitely no common sense or supervision. And that freedom I felt in her wildness when we were running at full speed up a hill, that I loved and fell in love with, and so did Flash. And we felt so free and bonded in that trust too that we had. So that was such an incredible thing. And, you know, as fun as that was as a kid, I don't think I fully realized how much that meant to her as a horse, because she had finally found somebody who was going to let her be free and be wild and like keep that spirit in her, like lit and alive. And, you know, I was so grateful for that, because I think children have an understanding of freedom and wildness and how that's a part of our spirit and it should not be taken out. It should not be snuffed out. But I think adults forget this. And I definitely forgot it too over time. So fast forward to 2 decades later, I am trying to tame myself, otherwise known as adulting. And I had, I'd been going in and out of college, community college, trying to finish my business degree. I've been working in banking, but I felt so stifled in that bank and very confined, much like a wild horse being kept in a pen. And I was really trying. I was trying to finish things that I had started. I was trying to keep my family and me happy and live a safe and normal life. And I think I just came to a breaking point, because I had grown up in a very fun, creative kid. I would sing and I would dance and I would do art and I would write and I would ride horses and et cetera. So while I had been trying to be an adult for quite some time at that point, at least a minute there, I was struggling. And I really did come to a breaking point where I had to make an agreement with myself. And this time, instead of making that agreement, you know, with a horse, it really was between just me and that lesson that Flash had taught me about being free and wild and keeping that spirit alive and being true to yourself. And so I decided to do that. I made massive changes in my life. And to catch you up on where I am today, I'm a game show host. Yes. And I'm also a riverboat captain tour guide as well. And I do improv comedy. I have my own comedy podcast. And I have recently now started going back to singing for the first time in 7 years. And of course, as of quite recently, I have also become a storyteller.
That was wonderful. Oh, and what happened to Flash? I always have to know. I just love personality, and I know horses don't live forever. Yes. But
well, she's still alive, actually. Well, what was great is because, you know, I had started doing some creative things as a teenager because I'd worked with her for like, you know, a long time, but she'd become like a very skilled athlete. And I had started wanting to do theater as like in my teens. So this is many years later after competing with her and doing a lot of things, winning a lot of trophies. And my mom actually took over for a while because she was like, you can't have this like horse that's worth like so much right now. And just have her sit out there. And I was doing other things. And so my mom actually won the saddle with her and in big competitions. And she got to work with her and train with her in Flash's like final years of competing. And then after that, so she had a good long run of being a really good athlete. And she was not built for it either. She was much too small to do any of the things that she did, but she just did it anyway.
Oh,
you know, wow. she was like Rudy, you know, from the movie, like too small to be a football player, but just like had such heart to do it anyway. But yeah, so she did that for a long time. And then our family friend, Hannah, she grew up and she loved this horse. You know, she was my sister's friend. And she said, if you ever sell her, can I please have her? So, you know, years later when we did eventually sell her, because horses cost a lot and we couldn't justify keeping her after so much time. And she'd already done all of her, you know, championship competitions, and so we actually gave her to her, and she went out to Missouri and she got to stay there and she got to ride her, and she got married and had kids, and her kids got to ride her. And she's out there, and I think they sold her to a family friend. I'm actually trying to track her down right now because I don't know who she had sold them to, and this was just a few years back. And so I'm trying to get in contact with these people. I'm trying to find them and to see if I can fly out, because I believe she's still in Missouri somewhere. I'm trying to see if I can track them down, and I want to fly out and I want to go see her one last time. And just, I don't know, like, well, I'm not going to cry, but like, I want to thank her.
Well, that's going to be quite a reunion. So I'll have to have you back on the show to tell us about the reunion.
I'll have to write a whole nother story for that.
Definitely. Well, Abel told us that you have a podcast together called Everyday Idiots.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. So, and then you also mentioned you're a game show host.
Yeah. Yeah. I work at Game On ATX. It's here out in Austin. It's actually a private game show experience. So you and your family or friends or your company as a work group can come in and you can book it. And it's like you get to go on a real game show and you get the full experience. It's very Wheel of Fortune, Family Feud, and it's a blast.
Oh my gosh, I'll have to have a family reunion and come do Family Feud.
Oh, it's so perfect for that. Yeah, and you can even write in things that like you and your families are into, you know, and like, you know, be like, oh, we like this type of, you know, movies and music, like, and we'll actually incorporate that into the game so it feels more like, you know, attuned to you and your group.
Well, if I could get my extended family, it starts with what I call my ex-wife-in-law, who was my husband's first wife. And they had two boys, and he and I co-raised them with her. So there's the two boys, my ex-wife-in-law, and then there would be me and the two daughters I had who grew up with the boys. And then there's the new wife. It would be a blast to have us all meet on a Family Feud show. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but...
I think you should, 100%. I get you a discount, I will get you in there.
And it's great to hear that you and Abel are playing and singing together. Yeah. I do get to Austin, not as often as I'd like to. Austin was my birthplace. And I always, when I tell people that, I say, take a moment of silence and bow, because it really is the center of the universe. And so I try to get back there a few times a year. And I definitely want you to keep in touch and tell us where you'll be playing. And we can announce that, and I'll be happy to go. Okay, check out Everyday Idiots. Now, speaking of idiots, or maybe I should say idiocy, what happens when the animal you meet is not one that you really wanted to connect with? Who knows? There might still be a lesson here, a memory to be made. After all, I've learned to love the possums in my yard. They eat cockroaches. What's not to love? But what happens if it's an animal that you really don't want in your yard? Maybe some other animals are not quite as welcome. What about learning to live with a skunk, or maybe just a skunk's residue? That might take quite a dose of Taoism. Our next guest is Susan Mack. Susan is a mother, a storyteller, an advocate, and she's working on a Master of Fine Arts from the Vermont College of Fine Arts. Please share your story with us.
Great. So my story starts at 4:45 one Saturday morning when I was jolted out of REM sleep by a smell. I couldn't quite tell what it was. I didn't think it was a gas leak. It wasn't someone forgetting to wear socks with their gym shoes and then taking them off after 3 days. It might have been the sewer having a problem. What I did know was that this smell was so noxious and overwhelming that when I started wandering around the house to find its source, it was at least 2 or 3 minutes before I also realized that the dog was barking. Now, soon after this, my husband got up, Chris, and he started wandering around the house with me. We couldn't quite find it, so we wandered outside where we found the smell also outside. We found our neighbors outside because they had also been woken up by the smell. And soon we found not one, but two fire trucks responding to my neighbor's call to emergency services. And when the first fire truck pulled up and the lead fireman jumped out of the truck, he identified for it the smell for us in one word, skunk. He not only knew what it was, but he had recognized it a full 2 blocks away. And I can tell you, I mean, I've smelled skunk by the side of the road. And when I was a kid in Eastern Washington, one sprayed the inside of our garage, but I don't remember it being quite this powerful. So I guess even skunk smells are bigger in Texas. Now, the firemen started wandering around trying to find the source of the smell, and they found it on our floor-to-ceiling windows in our living room, which face into the backyard. There was the telltale chartreuse splatter marks of skunk oil. The best we could figure was that the dog had seen the skunk in the backyard, started barking like nobody's business, and the skunk, not understanding the protection of plate glass, decided to defend itself. Well, by the time we found this, it's getting close to 6 a.m. My kids have woken up. They do not want to stay in the house, in the neighborhood, or anywhere. They went and hid in the car because somehow that was a protective bubble that didn't smell as bad. So we drove them up to their fortunately early rising grandparents, dropped them off, came back, hit Google to try to figure out how to clean this up. Note, not tomato juice. That is a myth. Instead, we used a combination of bleach and ditch soap and vinegar to try to break down the oils in the skunk spray. We opened up all the doors and windows. We started boiling vinegar because it was supposed to clean the air in the house. And then with nothing left to do, we went about our day. Chris went up to his office and started working. I realized it was about time to take my then 13-year-old to horseback riding lessons. So I went, picked them up from the grandparents, and went out to the barn. A couple hours pass. We're leaving the barn. My phone rings. I can see on my car console that it's Chris. So I answer, and his voice comes out of the car speaker saying, "Don't bother coming home." Now, these are words that sound like there's a real problem, maybe even the end of a marriage. Don't bother coming home. But fortunately, I knew it wasn't my relationship that stank. It was just the house. So I answered, "Great, I'll meet you at your parents'. Can you grab a phone charger? Because I forgot to grab one as I left the house." And he said, "No, you don't understand. I can't go inside. The skunk is in the house." What? The skunk is in the house? At this moment, I do the only thing that an empathetic spouse can do, and I burst out laughing. As does Tab, my 13-year-old. We are laughing so hard, I have to pull the car over to the side of the road. But my poor husband is not similarly amused. He proceeds to explain that he'd been up in his office working. He heard the dog barking. He went downstairs to see what was going on and looked underneath the piece of furniture that the dog was very interested. And there it was, the tail with the white stripe. And he instinctively grabbed the dog, ran out of the house, and shut the doors, which the skunk had walked in through. Only then realizing that their places really should be switched around. He had accidentally ceded our territory to the skunk, who was somewhere in the house partying away. So he had been madly calling wildlife services, trying to get somebody to answer on a Saturday morning and hoping somebody would call back. Well, I apologized for laughing and acknowledged his frustration. And he said there really wasn't much that I could do. And right then his phone beeped and he thought maybe this is one of the wildlife services. So we got off the phone. I headed to the grandparents. And not long later, he called me to say the wildlife guy had come. The skunk was out of the house, but they hadn't gotten it out without the skunk spraying. And it happened to spray in this crawl space underneath our stairs that is the only place in our house that has exposed wood, unpainted, just ready to soak up skunk oil and hold onto it for dear life. Well, I started trying to call services that might be able to take care of this for us because we're not really the kind of DIY couple that really wants to deal with the smell of skunk. And I called our handyman service. I called a contractor we know. I called a friend who's a realtor, figuring realtors deal with everything. And none of them really had immediate ideas for who else I could call for help. But my realtor friend did post it on her Facebook Realty Interest Group. And one of them said that they'd heard that douche removed skunky odors, which I did not find particularly helpful in this case. So we went to work. My sweet husband, Chris, did most of the cleaning while I tried to keep life normal for the kids. I booked our hotel rooms. I went and got their clothing so that we could wash them at the grandparents and not risk having them go to school smelling like skunk on Monday. And I went to the pet store to get candles because I thought that those pet enzyme candles that are supposed to clean pet odor out of the air might be helpful. But the problem was this was in March. So the only candles they had were leftover from Christmas and they didn't have two of any smell that I liked. So instead I bought three different ones, Candy Cane, Autumn Harvest, and Pecan Pie. And I went and spread them out around the house to clean the air while Chris was working with bleach and then letting that dry out. And then he found a paint primer that was supposed to lock in smell. So he was painting over it. And we put vinegar around because that was supposed to help. Now we spent about 2 days of effort on this, most of Saturday, most of Sunday. And by Sunday afternoon, when I went to go grab more clothes for the kids, what I found was this, all of this effort that we had put into cleaning out the skunk smell had instead created an experience. So when I walked in the front door of my house, right where the spray had happened, my nose was assaulted by the combination of nutmeg and cinnamon and peppermint and buttery pecans and bleach and vinegar and paint and even more powerfully, skunk. I wasn't sure whether to vomit or cry or both. All I know was that I needed to run away from anything that smelled like that. So we spent another night in the hotel. And at this point, my kids are not thinking that this is a fun adventure. I had to comfort the oldest, who was crying on my shoulder. And part of me was crying too, even though I wasn't all the way there yet. But I couldn't effort away those emotions, just like I couldn't effort away the smell in my house. But fortunately, that effort plus time did what the effort alone could not, because the next morning when we woke up and headed off to the normalcy of school and work and whatever we were doing that day, we weren't as upset. And when I went back into the house, what I found was the smell was still there, but it was a lot more tolerable than the day before. And we could stand to be in the back of the house or upstairs or away from that horrible front area. And with each day that week, it got better and better and better. Now, I'm not going to tell you that the smell has ever totally gone away, because even now, almost 2 years later, on a hot summer day, especially if it's a little humid, when I walk into that bathroom in front of that closet under the stairs, I can still catch a musky smell. But instead of being overpowering and making you want to cry or vomit, it's actually kind of pleasant, and it calls back other smells that have come and gone, like birthday cakes and diapers and breastfeeding and abandoned soccer cleats and the horse barn. And all of these smells that together form the perfume of a really wonderful family life.
Wow. What a way to turn a skunk smell into a perfume. But that's a wonderful knitting together of those odors. That really is special. I have never been that close to a skunk. I've only smelled them from the car, you know, driving by on a highway and saying, oh, there's a skunk nearby.
Well, I'll be honest, I really wouldn't recommend it. I'm just glad that the dog and the skunk did not meet each other, because that would have been really disastrous.
Yes, and it's interesting you mentioned the tomato juice, because that did happen to a friend of mine whose dog met a skunk, and then he had to pull the dog back, so then he had skunk on himself, and he said they all took a bath in tomato juice together outside, but I guess that doesn't really quite do the job.
No, they actually... there's a whole bunch of Google recommendations, but they actually have specific like pet shampoo for skunk.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. And thanks for turning a trauma into warmth. I want to thank Christopher Trandell, Eric Heen, Christina Fouts, and Susan Mack for contributing these wonderful stories to us. We will be back next week with more tellers and new journeys. But don't leave. Stay tuned into KPFT, because Living Art, hosted by Mike McGuire and Becky Ray, is up next, hosting Houston poets, writers, theater groups, and performance artists. Make Houston's community station, KPFT 90.1, a part of every day. And while you're driving home or just chilling, join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? It's a great way to make the commute go by. Keep loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Mary Edgerton, and along with the rest of the SWYS team, we never want you to forget that even if a story doesn't end the way you want, it's never too late to live happily ever after. Peace. And remember, be it birds, funny-looking dogs, a spirited horse, or smelly skunks, we humans have lessons to learn. And here's a song that I would like to dedicate to all our pets. Say,
only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love. To be. Take. for I can't help falling in love with you. Like a river flows